Welcome in, listeners, to another episode of the Busby Babe podcast. I'm your host, Colin Dams. Nathan Heinchel is out today. We hope he feels better, but I'm joined once again by Polly Questel and a special guest, Aaron Moniz. How's it going, folks?
It's good. Aaron's like a, what, guest number two that we've had? Or second most prominent guest. Sorry, Aaron, you're not Carl Anka, but he did get a shout out from Carl Anka on Talk of the Devils today.
I did?
Carl mentioned that he was talking on Twitter to his Twitter friend Aaron, and I assume that was you.
I guess I gotta go listen to that Talk of the Devils pod. I'm a big Carl Anka fan and honored to be supposedly your second biggest guest. I have reservations. I'm sure that's not quite true if you do the math, but really glad to be here. Big fan of the site.
Not to upset any of our previous or future guests, all guests are loved and appreciated equally. So
come out later.
Yeah, we'll do a top 10 slideshow of Busby Bay podcast guests.
Let's get 10 guests first.
So we're coming out of this international break, and Manchester United fans are expecting the second debut of one Cristiano Ronaldo this weekend against Newcastle. I know this is a topic which we talked a little bit about our frustrations with last week, but Aaron, I wanted to give you the floor to kind of either share or expand upon that from your own point of view.
Yeah, sure. I mean, I think I've kind of made a conscious decision to not talk about the Ronaldo signing anymore after I talked about it a lot around the time it was confirmed. Off the pitch, I've taken a stance against it for not to get too deep into it, but I believe the sexual assault allegations against him. And on the pitch, I think depending on Cavani's fitness, there's actually a chance that he could improve United, but probably not to the extent that, you know, just sorting out the existing plan of the project and getting that midfielder in would have done. And I think it's going to present a few interesting tactical question marks in terms of does he play alongside another striker, which he's been doing in recent years, or is he the lone nine? And then on top of that, you know, they've changed the squad composition by signing him and selling Dan James. And now there's four different number nines who are vying for what is currently one spot. So I'm interested to see how you manage Ronaldo, but also please Cavani. But also allow Greenwood to continue getting minutes in a position he's done many good things in and perhaps offers a different profile. And then also not completely forgetting the existence of Anthony Martial. So, yeah, I think there's going to be a lot of interesting question marks. And I'm curious to see how Solskjaer goes about answering them in the next few weeks.
Do we say that there's four guys vying for one spot? Like Cavani, yes. Ronaldo, probably. Martial can play off on that left wing. I don't think he should. Mason Greenwood can play on the right. And we've really only seen him, I guess, in theory, against Wolves, Martial was fit and available. But other than that, we've really only seen him play as a starting striker when Cavani and Martial aren't fit. So is it really four guys going for one spot, or more like we got two guys there, one guy who, if he's not there, is unfortunately going to play there, play somewhere else, but probably shouldn't? I feel like there's a lot of combinations we can go.
Yeah. I mean, you pose that question to the right person, because I actually don't mind Greenwood at right wing at all. I think it's allowing him to develop an interesting side of his game. I don't think he's an uncreative player, but I don't think he's a Pogba, Fernandes, Sancho level creative player. So I think it's interesting to have that dynamic where you can put him on the right wing and have him hold the width and perhaps stay off the ball and then make late runs and try and get him behind and kind of function as almost like a wide second striker type of thing. So I think, yeah, that could be an option. I would like to see Sancho playing on the left wing. On the right wing in this game, but Greenwood could continue to be an option there. As for Martial, I'm not a fan of him outside the striker position now. I think there have been changes in his game that have been made towards him being a striker, and now it's just too far to go back. He's kind of one-dimensional and just kind of runs at his fullback and then doesn't know what to do next whenever he plays on the left wing. So I think there's three distinct strikers at least with I really don't want to see Ronaldo play out wide. So I think there's three distinct strikers at least with my opinion on Greenwood is still mixed, but I think Solskjaer wants him to be, well, not necessarily a number nine primarily, but I think he does want to start to give him minutes in that position. So I do think he can play out wide, and I would say there are at least three options. But yeah, I'm interested to see. Maybe Greenwood will continue to play out wide.
Yeah, Ronaldo's presence alone is a really big challenge for Solskjaer, and I think this positioning issue just kind of adds to that, because like you've said, with Mason Greenwood, playing on the right has kind of allowed him to develop other aspects of his game that need to be developed other than being really good at shooting the ball. And you know, we saw him play a little bit at center forward against Wolves and Southampton, and obviously he started there against Leeds, and he looked pretty well suited for the role, the way that the squad was currently built. But with Cristiano Ronaldo in the team, he's somebody who sort of just demands the attention to be the center part of the attack. I do wonder, when everyone is fully healthy, what that's going to look like, because you almost need to surround Ronaldo with players who are going to do all of the legwork when it comes to build-up play.
It's not just the build-up play, but the defense. It's been well documented over the past 2 weeks where Ronaldo ranks in terms of his pressing and his work rate. And this is a fan base and a team that's already fed up with Anthony Martial and how much he does. Well, you know, at least Ronaldo brings goals. But that is a good question. Like, my question that I've constantly been in my head is, I feel like and obviously they're going to go with Ronaldo, you have to fully commit to Ronaldo. And that's basically saying, let's surround him with the types of players that are going to get the best out of him, and not so much with our best players. That's what we did with Zlatan Ibrahimovic, where it was like square peg in round hole. And you had a team with a bunch of guys that were looking to run in behind and play balls in behind that Zlatan did not facilitate. And now, and it just didn't work the right way together. Whereas it just seems like that's the way to go now, is if we want Ronaldo on the pitch, it's how do we facilitate getting the best out of Ronaldo? How do we set up? Who do we put out there? Or is it, what I'm afraid will happen is, let's just put our best players on the pitch, because I don't know if Bruno Fernandes and Cristiano Ronaldo work on the pitch together.
Yeah, that Euro 2020, those three games or those four games of Portugal where Fernandes ended up getting benched kind of slightly concerned me. It's interesting you talk about pressing, off-ball work rate, and defensive now a week after Dan James was sold. Because he would, if you go,
really,
you know, you're creating an imbalance in the team. How do you fix it? Just plant Dan James on one wing and tell him to run a lot. And that's usually Solskjaer's solution to how do I fix an imbalance. The thing with Ronaldo is that he kind of peaked as this elite creator and then more above elite goal scorer, where he was just scoring a ridiculous amount of goals, but also he was playing left wing, so dribbling, creating for his teammates. And he has lost kind of the dribbling, creating for his teammates aspect of his game, but he's kept the kind of usage numbers, which means he's still just getting the ball a lot, and he's not as effective with it as he used to be. And I mean, I would have a hard time claiming that Ronaldo isn't the best goal scorer at the club immediately after joining, but I wouldn't have a hard time saying that I would much prefer players like Pogba, Fernandes, Sancho to be the ones who have the ball and have Ronaldo be the one who's on the receiving end. And if he's willing to do that, I think he could actually improve the side a lot. I do think Cavani offers a certain element of the defensive side with the pressing, and he's constantly harrying the opposition. I think it was the Europa League final where I just remember Cavani making it so difficult for Villarreal's goalkeeper and center backs to do anything without him just constantly going after them. And Ronaldo doesn't offer that at all. So he's going to have to make up for it in a way that not only adds to United's on-ball ability, but also doesn't take away from the on-ball ability of other players in the team. So there's a lot of questions that are going to have to be answered. And I mean, I think Newcastle's a good game to kind of get started with answering that. I don't think it shouldn't be a hugely difficult game. So hopefully you can begin to see how he fits in and how Solskjaer begins to work it so that the actual best on-ball players in the team can still succeed. And Ronaldo doesn't take away from that, but can add what he is actually good at, which is scoring goals of all kinds.
Yeah, with that, I can confirm that Carl was talking about Aaron. yeah, he brought up the Euro 2020 thing with Bruno, and the whole thing is Bruno, Ronaldo's, the question in my mind is, if you look at Ronaldo's past teams, whether it be Portugal or Juventus or Real Madrid, it's kind of, he's been the center forward in this 4-3-3 lone striker, or he's been the left wing, but kind of playing as a second striker and just not doing anything. And the rest of the team kind of shifts into a 4-4-2 off the ball. They did that a lot at Real Madrid. Either way, you're putting in three midfielders to like make up the industry that you lack with Ronaldo. And in other words, there was never a number 10 in there. And this is a United team that is built around the number 10 in Bruno Fernandes. And does that coexist? And everybody will say, well, you could play, they play together for Portugal. Well, it's like Bruno Fernandes has 3 goals and 3 assists, I think, for Portugal when Ronaldo's on the pitch. And for someone as creative as Bruno is and as good of a goal scorer as Ronaldo is, you would expect that number to be higher. So somewhere there's a disconnect there. And
Portugal doesn't really play with a number 10, though, do they?
I mean, don't, because you're moving Bruno back because you have to make up for the lack of there are people that will tell you right now that watch more Portugal than I do that Portugal are a better team this day and age when Ronaldo's not playing, because the rest of the team can flow better and play in positions that work for them. So there are so many questions here as to how this is all going to work. I disagree with Aaron when he says Newcastle's like a good game to figure this out. I think Ronaldo's going to have 4 goals within the next 2 games, because that's how these things always happen. And then it's going to be over time when it's like, oh, okay, we got off to a good start. And now it's like, wait, was a series of 1-1 draws or 0-0 draws. And you're like, why isn't this working? And then it becomes frustrated when you're sitting around in November being like, something's going on, and who the fans will choose to scapegoat and who they start calling for Solskjaer to drop. Like, that's when it gets into the nitty gritty and you're like, we got to fix something.
Well, they're going to scapegoat not Ronaldo.
Yeah. Scapegoat Bruno?
With both Juventus and Portugal, it's been, you know, everyone around Ronaldo, or with Portugal, especially at the Euro this summer, you saw people in the media going after Bruno Fernandes saying, you know, he's had this great season in the Premier League. Where's that player that we've been watching this whole time?
Yeah, I mean, Paulie mentioned Portugal and you just said Juventus. And as soon as he said Portugal, the first thing I was thinking was, you know, nobody's talking about the fact that Juventus signed this guy for 100 million. And then in 3 seasons, we're willing to just let him go for anything.
Yeah.
So that tells you what you need to know, in that they kind of realized that he wasn't actually really adding to the overall team, if even keeping the overall team as good as it already was. So when you're paying £2 million every month to have that in your side, you better have some answers. and I mean, if the last 10 minutes are anything to go by, I don't have those answers.
Yeah, I don't think any of us do. And we spoke about this last week. Was Jonathan Wilson wrote about it, how Ronaldo went to Juventus and he scored 81 goals there in 3 years and didn't make them any better. They had their worst season in relative worst season this past year than they've had in the last 9 years. That's not to say that it's Ronaldo's fault, but if you take where they were as a baseline and, oh, we made the Champions League final two out of 3 years or however many it was, and we want to get back there, they weren't getting back there. So Ronaldo was scoring goals, but the rest of the team, and I look at Paulo Dybala, who was like flying before Ronaldo came. And once Ronaldo came every summer, he was trying hectically to get out of there. That it makes me a little worried for when everybody says, oh, he's going to teach, he's going to have a profound influence off the pitch as well, and he's going to make our other players better, because Cristiano Ronaldo doesn't care about that. Cristiano Ronaldo cares about Cristiano Ronaldo, and there's just so much about Zlatan Ibrahimovic that comes back into play. Like, Cristiano Ronaldo was obviously a much better Zlatan Ibrahimovic, but the same buzzwords were being thrown around. Proven winner, proven goal scorer. He brings goals to the team. And it's, yes, Zlatan brought goals, but he didn't bring wins. And he was this big character that the other players can learn from. But Marcus Rashford and Anthony Martial had their worst seasons when Zlatan was around. And that goes further, as Martial gave that season a run for his money last year when Cavani came. So more competition might not be better for Anthony Martial, who, as we said 15 minutes ago, might be a lost cause at this point. That's fine if Mason Greenwood and Marcus Rashford and Jadon Sancho pick up the slack. But we're talking about the team plays a certain way. It's hard for me to think Cristiano Ronaldo will come in and be like, oh yeah, I'll just fall right in, and not Cristiano Ronaldo will come in and be like, well, I could score you 35 goals, but it has to be done this way, and the rest of the team has to fall in line to that. And that's where I think this can go in a disastrously way. Or he can Robin Van Persie this and then carry us to a title.
Well, yeah, and I mean, I'll let Colin move to, I'm sure we have a lot of other things to discuss, but I would use the Ronaldo-Lukaku comparison as kind of, if you look at, so you compared Ronaldo and Zlatan, and I would say that if you looked at Zlatan's season as United's number nine, and Lukaku's good season as United number nine, they scored roughly a similar amount of goals. I think Zlatan scored slightly more, but what we saw was that the entire rest of the team was scoring more goals with Lukaku in the team than with Zlatan, because Lukaku enabled a style of play that allowed other players to get chances. So in other words, while Zlatan individually might have looked better than Lukaku on the stat sheet, the team with Lukaku scored more goals in a season than the team with Zlatan, which is what matters ultimately. And, you know, a lot of people are looking at the stats now with Serie A last season and going, you know, Ronaldo scored more goals in a worse team than Lukaku. But I would implore those people to ask themselves, is Lukaku being up front for Inter one of the reasons why Inter were better than Juventus with Ronaldo, right? So, and that's one of the things I really like about Cavani, right? It's that everything he does is sacrificial, even as an elite striker. He is constantly moving around to create space for whoever space can be created for. And that's perfect in a team where, like I said, everybody else wants the ball. He doesn't want the ball, and he can actually change the game without touching the ball. And when you go and mess with that setup, I mean, I'm sure Ronaldo will score tons of goals, but what's the effect on the overall team is basically, I think, the summary of what we're looking at here.
So if Cavani doesn't want the ball and change the game without touching the ball, should we bring on the other guy who doesn't want the ball and changes the game without touching the ball? Because yeah. That's become a whole discussion this week.
Speaking of things that have become a discussion this week, what do you guys think that this means for Pogba on the left, which has been a semi-successful experiment for Solskjaer, but also one that has had mixed reviews from fans and one that has kind of exacerbated the midfield problem at Manchester United? The way that I see it, I'm not really sure that having somebody like Pogba on the left wing is going to maybe help things with somebody like Ronaldo up top. I think you might need a more natural winger on the left at that point.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I think there's a bit of a people like to come after Pogba for his work rate. But I honestly think if you're looking at United's wingers across the board, now that Dan James is gone, especially, there's a work rate crisis. Like, pretty much none of them track back. And I think Solskjaer honestly leans into it a little bit. I think he has this idea that if the wingers stay high up, it makes United more potent in transitions. I'm not sure whether that's more beneficial or not over a season to have your wingers not do much defensive work. But what it does mean is that whether Pogba's playing left wing or not, your defensive midfielders have more work to do because the wingers aren't defending. And so if he's not at left wing, he's also not going to be at defensive midfield covering those wingers. So I think no matter how you slice and dice it, Solskjaer's tried so many different things over the last 2.5 seasons, and it always goes back to playing McTominay and Fred in midfield. And my best answer as to why that keeps happening is because they're the only midfielders who can actually play at that level of intensity and mobility for 90 minutes and drive teams to the sword when United lose the ball. And they're not elite midfielders. They get rolled in transition sometimes. They don't have great passing range, but they're always going to be the guys who play in midfield. And when you look at that and what you have left, I don't think you can create many better combinations than a team with Pogba at left wing, because what he offers is, one, he's going to add things to the team that McTominay and Fred can't bring. So he's going to be able to, like, if you compare the amount that Pogba gets the ball to the other side of the pitch compared to McTominay and Fred, it's night and day. And if you compare it to other players who play at left wing, like Rashford, or right wing, like Greenwood, it's night and day. He's way more progressive and way more creative than all of those guys. And even if he's not going to be the type who's going to be swinging in crosses to Ronaldo, I still think the overall benefit of having Paul Pogba at left wing is going to be worth it over the course of a season, when it makes the midfield better and it gets the ball into the final third more often, which is going to benefit Ronaldo as well, I think, regardless.
Yeah, my answer is the same as basically every question that you could ask on this subject, and it depends who else is playing. And Aaron touched on this earlier when he brought up Mason Greenwood playing off on the right wing, and this is something that I had a theory about and was just too busy to really dive in, research it, and write about it, but basically saying that everything is kind of an offshoot of, or United are at their most successful when they're playing a formation that kind of evolved from a 4-4-2, and that you want two strikers on the pitch. It doesn't necessarily have to be two central strikers, but whether it's your left wing and right wing, one of them being that second forward. So if you think back to like the Lukaku days, it was, you had Lukaku and then Rashford, Martial off on the left, and on the right you had like a Lingard or a Mata, who was more of just a creator, not so much a wide winger, but you had your other two forwards and the other midfield help. And it got disjointed when Alexis Sanchez came in and said, well, no, I'm like more of the creator, and you only had Lukaku up top. And they've been good when they had Rashford and Martial in tandems up there with the work of Daniel James, or we've seen it last year when Juan Mata came into the team at the beginning of the season to kind of balance things out when they did have McTominay and Fred. We talked about it last year when Pogba got hurt, and we were like, Juan Mata is conspicuously absent from this team, and like, he's kind of the missing piece right now. Like, if we're missing all these components, Juan Mata would be a very useful asset. So it's like, you kind of want those two forwards and that extra creator to come in, and Pogba is that extra creator. So if you have Greenwood on the right wing, he becomes that second forward. You have Ronaldo and Greenwood up front, and Pogba drops in and becomes the extra creator. The question is, what does Jadon Sancho do? Because I think Jadon Sancho could be that wide winger, or he could be like your Marcus Rashford and play as an extra forward. So which one are you getting? And if you're getting the Jadon Sancho like wide winger, will Paul Pogba on the other wing be as useful as he's been over the past few games in this recent run of form? So it really just depends on who's in there and how the rest of the team is setting up.
Yeah, I mean, here's the question I'd pose to you guys, and this probably goes straight out the window when Rashford's back, because I'd imagine Rashford's going to play.
That's going to be a whole different Pandora's box. It's like, what do you do when Marcus Rashford comes back?
Okay, well, the question I would have is, against Leeds, Greenwood was up front, but it wasn't Greenwood who was getting off most of the shots and goals. It was Bruno. And that was Pogba and James wide, but perhaps with Sancho coming in for James, you might see Bruno playing in more of that strikerish role. And what are your thoughts on maybe Bruno kind of transitioning to a role where he's more of a striker and less of a do everything and anything in the face of kind of the squad getting better players to help him with some of the responsibilities that he had before.
Yeah, so basically, so like, as part of the theory that I had on this piece was like, basically you have like five jobs up front and you need like four player or maybe six jobs, and you need like four players to fill those six jobs, and you need your out and out scorer. Like, you have your out and out creator, you have the guy who does both, then the guy who provides the work, and Bruno fits a lot of them, and it's like, but you don't want Bruno fitting all of them because you're just gonna wear him out.
Because Bruno only fits a lot of those when he's not frustrated.
Right. Well, that, yeah, that too. But you just don't want to wear Bruno out. Like, if you could ask Bruno to do two jobs, as opposed to four jobs, that's better. So which jobs do you give him, and how do you compensate for it? But I did really like the fact that, yeah, against Leeds, he was basically being that second striker, and Pogba was being the creator, and Daniel James was the one doing the dirty work. And, you know, basically like what Rooney and Tevez had to do when Ronaldo was playing up front was someone else has to do his running. And that was, James was doing that as Mason Greenwood was either, I mean, he was doing a lot of just drag people wide, which works against Leeds. And the question is, how much will it work against teams that aren't just straight men marking you?
Yeah, it would be really useful to have other forward options like Rooney and Tevez that have the kind of multi-skill set that they have right now. I really don't know, though. Ronaldo, obviously, the last 3 years at Juventus has developed a much more selfish personality because of the way that he's played, as well as just kind of his general narcissism. But I mean, back in those days, Ronaldo was willing to share the ball. And I guess going back to the Bruno question, that it's kind of dependent on whether Ronaldo was willing to share the ball again. Because I love Bruno Fernandes as the number 10 in Ollie's system, but with a player coming in who could potentially change all of that. I mean, yeah. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, if Bruno's the lively one who makes these off-ball runs and everything. And I think both Leeds, this game and the previous Leeds game, were the ones that showcased that the most, because I've said this a million times, I've never seen Bruno more frustrated, not at the referee, than that game at Elland Road, where he was playing these balls and no one was making the run. And then later he was giving the ball up and he was making the runs and he was wide open and no one was playing the balls. And he was just like, oh, right. Like when Pog was not on the pitch, like no one can pick this ball out. So if we have the guys on the pitch that are going to give him the ball, like, yeah, I love seeing him make those runs because he is fantastic at it. And he's, Paul Pogba makes those runs too. But the sneaky thing about Paul Pogba is he's not a good finisher. Bruno Fernandes is.
Yeah.
So this is a bit of a random one, but do you guys think that there is a midfielder we can buy at this point that just allows Pogba to be part of a pivot without defensive duties?
No.
I mean, I'm thinking if we just ditch Haaland next summer and offer Bayern Munich £200 million for Joshua Kimmich, maybe at that point.
Well, I mean, I don't know. I think there's more problems to Pogba in the pivot than just the defensive thing. I think teams have kind of figured out how to crowd him in build-up. And I also just, more than that, and I think he's a good pivot midfielder. Like, I think if you look at the sum of the qualities of all the defensive midfielders United have, you would say that Pogba's probably still the best one who can play in that position. But when you look at what Pogba can offer in the final third, it doesn't make sense to put him in a role where most of his contributions are in the defensive and middle third. It just, you're trying to fit too many players in the side and losing the essence of what those players actually offer when you try and go with the either Pogba and Fernandes as dual eights or Pogba and a pivot. Like, besides in specific scenarios, I really wouldn't go for that. I think the better solution would be to buy a midfielder who does what Pogba does well in a pivot, and then also a couple of other things, and play that midfielder next to Fred or McTominay or an improved version of one of those two guys, and then go with the full freedom of Pogba and Fernandes ahead of them. And then you get the benefits of what Pogba offers to a midfield, But you also get everything he can offer in the final third with his dribbling and creation. And then on top of that, you also get an extra body when you need it, who's going to come into the midfield if needed and add another thing for opponents to deal with. And that's why I kind of wanted someone like Locatelli this summer, but we wanted Ronaldo, so maybe next year.
I think the problem is that United fans have gotten this into their head where, like, they won't accept it. Hey, we signed this guy from Marseille that you don't know. It needs to have a name. There needs to be name recognition, and I don't think they need that. Like, to answer your question, Colin, is there a guy that we could play alongside Pogba in a pivot so that he doesn't have to do any of the defensive things? No, but, like, we don't need him. Like, he is not great defensively, but he's not atrocious defensively either. If we ask him to do that work, he'll do it. It's more of the reason that he's not working now next to McTominay, and the reason that he doesn't work against – the reason he doesn't work next to Fred is because there's no physicality there, and it doesn't not work so much, but when you come up against an Adama Traore, he's just going to manhandle Fred, and Pogba's not going to get involved in that. And then you're cutting through the midfield like a knife through warm butter. But the reason that you can't put him next to the two of them, even if Fred was more physical, is because, as Aaron alluded to, is teams just know how to crowd him. And they leave McTominay wide open. They leave Fred wide open, and they go, we're not going to let Paul Pogba bring the ball up the pitch. You do it. Like, we'll let Fred beat us. We'll let McTominay beat us. Like, Villarreal just sat off McTominay, and they were like, if we lose because McTominay is picking out passes, so be it. And you challenge that player to beat them. So we have talked about this before. Like, if you can go back to the 2008 team and pick a player to put on the team right now, how we would all select Michael Carrick. Yeah. Michael Carrick is not a tackle machine. Michael Carrick is not the most mobile of midfielders, and he's not an interception machine. And frankly, neither is Nemanja Matic, even in Matic's prime. He's a guy who reads the game well. His value is that he holds his position and doesn't let he holds you up so that my guys have time to get back, recover, and set up. It's not so much, oh, win the ball back right away. Fred's a win the ball back right away guy, and when he doesn't win it back, that's when it becomes a problem because he dives into the tackle, and now you've left your other guy on an island. But at least Carrick can sit there and make the pass. So if you want to crowd Paul Pogba and leave Michael Carrick open, he'll pick you apart. Like, don't forget that when Pogba arrived, Mourinho put him in a pivot with Fellaini for this exact reason. So Fellaini can do the physicality and everything. And when did Pogba start playing well? When he put him next to Carrick. Like, that's just what you need. Like, so United, and they don't need a world-class player there. They need someone who could come in and be like, look, your job is to sit and hold your position and do the defensive work well enough and be able to pass well enough that teams can't just sit on Paul Pogba. And then we can have the discussion of, okay, well, you have Bruno, Rashford, Greenwood, Sancho up front. By playing Pogba deeper, we're not getting the best out of him and the best version of him. But is that okay because we have enough talent up front that, hey, now we just have two midfielders that could feed them the ball and you could go from there?
Yeah, I think that's a good point. I think the best argument against playing Paul Pogba further forward permanently is you might say that you can assemble a better team. You might argue that you can assemble a squad of better forwards than you can assemble midfielders if you move Pogba further forward. I personally don't agree. I just think that if you look at even in the Juventus days, like, if you have Pogba driving at players and making plays in the final third, I don't think there's many players around anywhere who are going to be better than that. And I don't think there's many players who will even have a better overall impact, because I just think he's such a ceiling raiser to the overall team from that position. So for me, the approach would be to try to replicate what the solidity of that McTominay and Fred pivot brings with better players, and then let him thrive further forward. But I do understand the argument of, you know, have someone who's more disciplined in defensive transitions and isn't incompetent in build-up, and that will give Pogba more space to be the player he is and just hold the shape of the team in defending transitions and actually be allowed to bring the ball forward, because the other team has more to worry about. That's probably what I would have as my second best option for the future of Pogba.
I do wonder how we would look at it if Mourinho didn't stick Pogba in a pivot when he first arrived, and if Pogba didn't really play there for France. Because, yeah, you think about that run on when Ollie first came in and how and the Southampton match, the Leeds match when you play him further forward, and the Tottenham match last year, and how good and dominant he is. And you think about it and you're like, oh, you're right. Like, United don't have a player like this, and he's so good there. But we have all this information of, like, him in this pivot, and it's like, well, United shoot more and they create more chances when he plays deeper, and when it works, it works. You look at Project Restart, and it was like he was really good and he was playing simple and he was allowing the rest of the team to just do really good things. And, like, you could have a really good team if you play him deep and you cover for him, because we have the idea of what it looks like. That now it's like you can make that argument, when really the argument should be like, hi, look at how freaking good he is in this position. Yeah. Why would you put him anywhere else?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think there's a time later in his career where you might go, he has ridiculous passing ability and we can cover for him. Let's put him behind a bunch of extremely mobile midfielders and have him tear teams apart from deep. And in a way, I kind of think that's what France have done, but I just don't like the France comparisons because, one, he's working with an amount of time and space that literally just doesn't exist in the Premier League. Like, the amount of time people give him on the ball at international level is a crime. Like, if Tuchel and Guardiola's players were doing that against Paul Pogba, they would not play again. They would never see football at a professional level again if they gave Pogba the luxuries that he's sometimes given at international level. And the second issue that I have with it is that it's the things he does for France are spectacular, don't get me wrong, but they're also a very small subset of what Paul Pogba can actually do. People have this image of Pogba playing for France that's just like, he's just spraying passes left, right, and center, short range, long range, behind the defense, diagonal, switches, which is great, but he's also an elite dribbler. He can go to teams with his physicality. He's a good late runner into the box to receive crosses. He can score all kinds of different goals. Like, there's so much to this guy's game, and you're kind of looking at it as like, we want him to control games from deep, which is, it just doesn't make sense to me because he doesn't even have the complete skill set for that role. And he also has so much more to his game that can be found in other roles. So yeah, I don't like the France comparisons, and maybe later in his career we'll look at him and go, you know, his mobility's declined. He can't actually do that left-wing role anymore. He doesn't have the dynamism. So maybe we'll put him deeper and see if we can protect him and let him have time on the ball. But I don't think this is the time.
I just wonder if Phil Neville will be smart enough to make that adjustment when he has him at Inter Miami.
I think that's interesting, though, is like, you know, the question of whether or not we actually signed Pogba to an extension or not comes with the question of what do you do with Pogba when he's, you know, 31, 32, 33. It's like, what does that sort of Pogba look like in this Manchester United team? But
I think he'll look, yeah. I think he'll look a lot like the Wayne Rooney, not when Wayne Rooney was washed up, but like Robin Van Persie's Wayne Rooney, where it was like, we don't really want him to be the second striker anymore. He can't quite play midfield, but like, he could sit in midfield and spray passes everywhere. Where do we put him? Where do you get the best out of him? Do you want him playing off the shoulder of the striker? Do you want him playing up top? Do you want him playing down low? Like, that's where Paul Pogba was going to fit, where it's like, at that point in his career, like, his legs are going to be gone, where if you play him up top, there's someone better that could play up top there and give you more energy. And if you play him, if you drop him deeper, like, then there's going to be flaws in his game that you have to account for.
Yeah. All right. Well, to wrap up this episode, looking ahead at Manchester United's upcoming fixtures, we talked a little bit about how Newcastle was potentially a good match to try and see how things look with Ronaldo.
Famous last words.
Yeah. And then BSC Young Boys is right after that, which is a club that we should handily beat, or we expect to handily beat in Europe. So do we think that this is a couple of games where we see Ollie go all out attack around Ronaldo?
He doesn't have much choice considering he doesn't have any midfielders to select.
And given that the admin for the club has not posted about anything else on Twitter.
Wait, we signed Ronaldo? I couldn't tell.
Buried in there yesterday or 2 days ago, there was a tweet about Mason Greenwood winning player of the month. And they're like, congrats, yeah. Mason. We hope you don't win it for the next 2 years. We hope you get thrown out onto the periphery while Ronaldo's here, but somehow get 2 years worth of development in the process.
No, he's learning from Ronaldo, remember?
Yes.
Oh, yeah, totally.
Right.
Yeah, well, yeah. Aaron, thank you so much for joining us.
Really appreciate being on. Like I said, I have been following you guys for a long time. Like, there were a couple points during the conversation when I thought, yeah, I've read articles Paulie's written about this. So it's a pleasure.
It warms my heart to know that someone read them that's not Colin who's forced to.
And even me, I'm just kind of like, all right, what do I need to edit?
Well, Brent, I used to email Brent like in the morning after they were posted with like, hey, here's a million typos that I found now that I'm proofreading it after you proofread it.
Yeah, Aaron, thank you for joining us, and we hope to have you again. Yeah, listeners, look for another episode at the weekend. I'm hoping to do a reaction to the Newcastle game with Matt. But yeah, we'll see how that goes. And thanks for listening.